Hey, this is Lawrence with a very quick correction. Throughout this episode, I'm going to fuck up and say that we listened to an episode of Dark Fantasy. This is actually from the Hall of Fantasy, not Dark Fantasy. Thank you so much and enjoy this episode of Bad Time Radio. My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio. So welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. Just the three of us this time. Classic Lawrence, Ronald, and Rahul Ep. And we are covering an episode called The Automaton, which is a dark fantasy episode that aired sometime in the 1950s. I have basically no background on dark fantasy. Apparently this is from a revival of it that aired in the middle 50s, 1953 to 1954, I think. There was an earlier one that focused entirely on crime, which makes me wonder why the hell it was called The Hall of Fantasy. This is from the revival, which focused more on stories of the supernatural. I've heard a couple of episodes of this. They didn't really stand out to me. In particular, I think that this is sort of one of the many kind of generic 1950s horror and science fiction radio dramas that existed at the time. I bet if you dug into it, you'd find a couple of classic eps and a lot of Drek, and this is very much on the Drek side of things. So with that out of the way, let's go around. This one, the spoilers don't fucking matter. You know it's called The Automaton. You can kind of guess what's going to happen, in general at least, but I guess a little bit, would you recommend this episode? I'll go first. I think that this is a great episode to listen to at 1.3 speed because it's a little bit pokey, but there is a lot of endearingly stupid things in here if you're willing to put up with a little bit of sort of early 50s pacing. Ronald, what do you say?
This episode is really good if you want to go in listen to a really just stupid episode. It's almost comedic. Well, it is comedic, but it's almost seems like it's intentional. I would definitely recommend it if you want to laugh. It's not really a good fantasy story.
And Rahul?
Yeah, because I think it's interesting. It's really interesting seeing how people back then from the before time thought about machines and computers, you know. It's it was just a different world, obviously. That I don't know, it's kind of cute, you know what I mean? It's what you would think if you didn't have any of your modern gadgets. Is everything's a gear or something, you know what I mean? It's that level of thinking. I feel
they did predict, they were pretty prescient in the software engineering side of things, of engineers being oh yeah, this could never happen. It's well, it just did.
And then it happens instantly when you turn it on. Just instantly.
Instantly kill. Wait, did you hard code that? God damn it, Ronald.
I thought you took that out.
Guys, it's second
the debug flag.
That was a joke.
Guys, I'm sorry. I set the debug mat to true. So one, it's not multi-threaded. It will be when we go into production. And two, apparently it's got a go-to kill subroutine in it. I'm sorry. Egg on my face.
It's hard to say why I ever thought that was supposed to be in there. But you know what? Just deal with it. It's there.
It's AI, man. It's beyond understanding.
Self-learning. But I put it in.
Our motto here is move fast and break things. And sometimes the thing we break is security guard.
Move fast and kill things, you know?
Yeah. Anyways, you guys want to get into or roll for the summary?
Summary.
Let's do it.
Okay, so I'll be 1-2, Ronald will be 3-4, and Rahul will be 5-6.
That's good.
Ah, oh, motherfucker. It's me. I rolled a 1. Okay.
Nat 1.
Yeah, well, on a D6, it's slightly less uncommon, but still. Okay.
We'll help you out.
Yeah, definitely. So we open on a the end of what appears to be some kind of scientific conference, and this guy with a crazy evil German accent named Dr. Ziegler is just bringing the fucking house down with this speech about how awesome automatons are going to be and how they're going to let mankind master everything.
Okay, yeah, here, let me try. It was like, we are going to make the machine to make human life.
That's pretty good, actually. It's not bad.
I mean, it is actually a German accent for a German man, which is normally Rahul just does an Australian accent for everyone. So we got to give him points for that.
That's at least 3 points.
And his accent in the radio show is pretty comic booky. So
yeah, but Rahul,
of course, he's a German scientist.
Rahul went for kind of stereotypical gay German, whereas this guy is stereotypical Nazi German. So,
I can't control it. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't intended to be. I was aiming for the evil scientist. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't aiming.
You have one German,
which is
it's all the same. That's my point.
It's sort of like how every
aim for evil science, and I all pretty much always aim for evil scientists. If I'm being honest.
Yeah. It's okay, sort of like how whenever I try to do an accent, I'm like, I've got this accent in me, and then I do the accent for like 2 seconds, and then it just turns into vampire.
Yeah, you always go straight to Dracula. Before we go forward, I want to say that this narrative is framed from a journal, like a guy writing his journal.
Oh, no. That is the giant spider one.
This one is too. I just re-listened to it.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
It's a complete fake out because he starts off and he says like, oh, I was at the conference where Dr. Ziegler made his now famous speech, which like makes you think, oh God, something terrible is going to happen to Dr. Ziegler. But it doesn't. Like, it just doesn't really make sense why that speech is now famous other than, you know, he really fucked up making a robot.
I loved it. Okay, so there's like the Emancipation Proclamation, the Cross of Gold speech, and this weird German guy talking about how cool robots are gonna be.
Yeah,
those are the great speeches of history.
Yeah, it's famous now because he made something that fell out of a window.
I mean, I guess in this fictional world, like, he's the one that brought this idea of robots. And that's also how they pronounce it in the show, which is so great. Robots.
Yeah. I think
mostly do call them automatons.
Yeah, that's true. He does call it the automaton. Bum, bum, bum. I think it's just funny because he says now famous, implying that at the time it wasn't.
Like, yeah, I don't know.
Like, as if some event occurred, you know? And if that event does occur, it's not in the story, so...
Yeah, this is like the weird footnote you get before he does the thing in the speech, essentially.
Yeah, it's I understand now famous.
And also the entire thing being framed as like this guy's journal, like, really doesn't pay off in any kind of way. There's only like 2 parts where it happens.
They don't even bring it back at the fucking end.
They don't bring it back at the end, so it doesn't mean anything. It's just, I guess, a way to set up exposition, but... Okay. Anyway,
just have him do the fucking exposition. It's pointless.
It is completely pointless.
It's like the other one which we didn't do. The frame narrative matters because it allows the man to be eaten at the giant spider by the end and be like, ooh, the giant spider. But this one is just like, no, it whatever. It's
yeah, right.
It's,
I mean,
it's like they had a generic story and then they or frame and then they slotted the automaton story into it without any regard for whether it was appropriate or not.
No way they did that, Lauren.
It's absolutely a theme of this episode that, like, there's a lot of stuff in here that does not matter at all. They could have cut. It doesn't add anything. It doesn't add any kind of humor or lightness to the show. It just
or more importantly, it's not scary at all.
Right. None of it's scary, and none of it's really that interesting or like good ideas. But yeah. So, anyways. Okay,
so
do you want? Sorry, I just wanted to point that out.
No, that was a good digression. So anyways, the guy goes and talks to Dr. Ziegler after, and Dr. Ziegler is aware of him. And then the entire scene is just him being like, hey, you're pretty cool, Dr. Ziegler. Dr. Ziegler going back, yeah, you're pretty cool too, bro. And then Dr. Ziegler going, hey, you want to get dinner later? And that's it. And it's like, oh, fuck,
it's my home.
Yeah. Like, why did we need to change scenes for this? Because... That the whole him going to his dinner is just to explain this job. But before he does that, he goes to another scene, which is at his lab. So it's like, why did we have this scene where he went to his house? Like, it didn't do anything except for have some like pleasantries where he's like, hey, you want a drink?
Like, I'm sorry, like, man. That. Real life is messy, you know? And I think the story just reflects that.
Yeah, just trying. Here's a mirror society.
You might think that, you know, this thing is only 24 minutes, so it should be, like, pretty quick moving, and it's not, which is astonishing to me. It's somehow 24 minutes and also padded to, like, twice the length it should be.
It's because there's nothing to the story. It's like, it could be a 5-minute story, and you wouldn't really lose any of the plot.
So, anyways, then they go and have dinner, and Dr. Ziegler's like, hey, you want a job? And the guy's like, okay. And I should mention, Dr. Ziegler is a world-renowned expert in automatic control. And a little bit of a Lawrence nerd out here. I believe automatic control probably would have been a real thing, like a real field of study in the 1950s. It's now probably just called control, and it's a subset of electrical engineering. It's also called cybernetics, and it has to do with making, like, self-regulatory systems that can respond to external inputs. So the guy, whoever wrote this, might have lucked into, like, a thing that was real, maybe. I don't know. It doesn't matter to anything. It's just a true fact.
Well,
I think it kind of makes sense.
All facts are
true. Yeah. Because this was pre-computer.
Yes.
At least, like, that most people were using.
That is one of the questions I had is, spoiler alert, they're trying to make a robot brain. And they're talking about a binary device. So I can't tell if, like, they are actually trying to describe a computer to an audience that, like, doesn't understand computers. I also don't actually know if the computers at the time would have switched over fully to binary yet. My understanding is the reason everything on computers is represented in binary code ultimately is that a transistor has an on and off state, so you kind of map everything onto a transistor. But early computers might not have been built with transistors. I know that at least the British one was actually a weird steam apparatus steam-based apparatus instead. So, anyways, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that one.
Well, I mean, the math characterizing those control systems in EE, I'm sure that's been around for a while, you know, regardless of the underlying implementation, mechanical, electrical, et cetera. So, you know, the control system they keep talking about constantly, it probably doesn't matter, the underlying computational apparatus.
Yeah, it is. This is completely off topic, but it is fucking weird that basically all of the math that, like, makes computers possible, like, even, you know, the logic gates, the zeros and ones, even, like, the church, like, numerical representation system that for some reason Haskell likes to use, or at least they made me learn it in my Haskell class, so I assume they were, like related in some way, all predate computers by, like, 30 to 50 years, and were apparently just sitting there waiting for someone to, like, figure out what to do with them that was useful.
That is crazy to think about.
Yeah, but anyways, so the guy takes the job, and then they go to Dr. Ziegler's laboratory. We meet his daughter and his security guard, and it's like, why the fuck does he have a security guard at this weird laboratory out in the country that's also his like country estate? I don't know.
Yeah, like it's like his country lab.
Yeah, you got your city lab and your country lab, Raul.
For some reason,
it's
outside the city, several or like an hour or something outside the city, and it's like, what?
Oh, and this is one of my favorite. This detail is pointless; it does not matter. The narrator mentions that he didn't want to leave his job full time, so he just took a leave of absence. Yeah. It's like, why? This doesn't, what?
Yeah, there's also a part where he says, like, oh, as soon as you can, come work in my lab. And he says, oh, it should be about 2 weeks. And it's like, that doesn't matter at all, because it immediately skips to the time when he's there. So it's like, you just put in a detail that means nothing to anyone. There's no sense of scale there for any kind of reason.
It's not like he was doing something else in the 2 weeks, like maybe saying goodbye to a sweetheart or something.
Maybe
studying.
Oh, and I also want to mention that when he first goes into the guy's house, when the assistant first goes into the guy's house, he hears him on a phone call, and the guy says, like, oh yeah, the robot's perfect. The only thing... He doesn't know that anyone else is there, and he's like, the only thing that's missing is it's going to be limited by how good the brain is.
Which
the guy's walking in,
Frankenstein kind of thing.
I totally thought he was going to try and steal this guy's brain, because he keeps talking about how intelligent he thinks he is, and he's like, oh, that wasn't a compliment. I just wanted to uh, I I
I just wanted you to know I respected you. Yeah,
and it's like, okay, well, he's definitely stealing his brain, right? But that doesn't—that's not at all what happens. Like,
and that, just, you know, the weird thing is, if that had been the case, the leave of absence thing might have mattered because it would have provided a mechanism where someone would notice the guy's missing and come try to rescue him. As it is, it's all baffling.
Right? Yeah, you think that maybe, like, oh, I took a leave of absence, so like somebody's going to notice when he's gone, and like the scientists didn't realize that, but. No, it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter at all.
Was Frankenstein, like, really popular around this time?
The movies were made in the 30s and were, I believe, periodically re-released, so it was always in the public consciousness a bit. And in the next scene, which we'll get to... Well, let's talk about that a little bit in the next scene. So they go to Dr. Ziegler's lab, and he's got what you fucking expect when you find the things called the automaton, which is a, you know, man made out of plastic and steel. And Dr. Ziegler's like, hey, check this out. And the thing gets up.
Yeah.
Stands up.
And I love in these old bad radio shows, like in new ones, they try and find creative ways of telling you like what's going on. But in like kind of badly written ones, they just like explicitly say things that you would never say when you're there in person. Like, he's sitting up. Now he's getting off the table. And, like, I'm not even exaggerating. Like, he's like, he's walking towards me. And it's like, yeah, dude, we're all here. We can see him. Like, but it's, yeah. You know, it's obviously for the audience, but it's just, it's kind of funny how unnatural it all sounds. He's like, wow, he's circling the room. Now he's getting back on the table. I don't know. I find it really funny.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, there are versions of this where they do it good. You mentioned the British ones we listened to and the more modern ones, and those definitely. And then occasionally they will, like, if the character gets really upset, it makes a little bit more sense for them to, like, comment on that sort of thing, especially if, like, they think they're about to die. Or at least you tolerate it more in heightened emotion. On this one, he's just he's observing something unusual, but it's not, like, upsetting, and he's still commenting nonstop on it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's obviously, you know, it's a mechanism for getting us some information, but I think it's really funny just the way how explicit he is with like everything. And you can probably guess what's happening anyways, because you hear him like uncover the thing. He's like, okay, I'll tell him to get up. And then you hear some like noises and the guy's like, whoa, he's getting up. And it's like, yeah, he just said he was about to, dude. And like, we heard him. I don't know. So anyways.
So the assistant is like, hey, so yeah, this is pretty cool. What do you need me to do? And the guy's like, well, we got to build its brain together. And the guy's like, oh, you mean the automatic control system? And Dr. Ziegler's like, I knew you were smart. And then the guy seems a little bit hesitant for a sec. So Dr. Ziegler goes off on a weird monologue about how this isn't Frankenstein, even though it very clearly is, because like Frankenstein, he is a creepy German guy who's trying to make artificial life without really thinking through the consequences.
But like intentionally, very obviously brushing over what possible consequences are.
So, yeah, this is a Frankenstein story, but it's very, you know how in some horror movies they will, you know, if you're like fighting a vampire, one of the characters will like take another one aside and say, this isn't like in the movies, the vampire rules are different, here's X, Y, and Z. It's sort of like that, except they don't justify it enough because they're not like pointing out things that are different aside from that this robot is built by technology, and they're trying to claim that Frankenstein isn't built by technology, even though he 100% is. I don't know. It's like hanging a light on a thing that they really should have just not mentioned at all.
They stole the story, and instead of just like putting their heads down, they just owned up, like, yeah, this is a Frankenstein story, and we're going to even mention it in the dialogue, so.
Yeah. So then, in the next...
like, we're going to put the controls on the robot's chest. And I was like, you know, I thought this was going to matter. I was like, how are you going to get to it? You know what I mean? He's going to block you, right? Like, I'm just thinking, like, a Terminator scenario where he's just got the button on his chest, like...
you're reaching out and trying to turn the robot off, and it annoyingly bats your hand away, like,
that's
no.
That's what I was thinking! That's literally what I was thinking was going to happen, like...
So, oh, and they also mentioned that the control mechanism is going to permeate... It's going to be binary-based and permeate the robot's entire body, which... Again, it's very weird because they seem to be trying to describe a computer, but in a situation where, like, they're trying to describe a computer to an audience that doesn't know what the fuck a computer is, and they're having very limited success.
Yeah.
So, So we cut to the next scene, and to the extent that the episode ever does get good, this is where it gets good, because they have managed to build the robot a brain. Dr. Ziegler was also apparently very insistent that it should be able to talk, so they've also taught this computer to talk.
You know what's so interesting, though, about this? Like, you know, now we have all these concepts about, like, training and learning, but here... Right. It's just like you build it and it can already do all the talking and the walking. Like now we're like, yeah, you build it and you probably have to train it with all this fucking data and all this.
Well, I mean, clearly they were not building an AI because they said like
I think it's interesting. You know,
Yeah. They had like specific responses to specific scenarios. It wasn't like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was just like a big if list. Or a big switch statement of like, okay, if he's getting threatened, do this. If he is told this, say this. Because they even say, like, we didn't put that response in anywhere.
Yeah, it's fucking... You guys can still hear me, right?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, sorry. It's crazy because they're trying to describe programming a robot, but they haven't, like, I guess because it would be a long time before computer science had grappled with this, really understood just how hard of a problem, like, responding to stimuli meaningfully and like moving through three-dimensional space and all that is. So now we try to solve all that by using like machine learning stuff because it's kind of the only thing that can handle a task of that complexity with the amount of hardware you can have in a system that can move around with a reasonable power draw and all that, right? Whereas this thing, they're just like, nah, you could hard code like all of human existence into a big long series of case statements. Why couldn't you? So anyways, they have programmed the robot to speak. Which on its own would be like an astonishing breakthrough that would like earn you like Nobel, not even just one Nobel Prize. Probably you would somehow sweep the Nobel Prizes for that year or something.
Oh yeah, but, and at this point they've been working for like a couple weeks.
So apparently it's pretty easy.
And what's his name? Dr. Sheridan or whatever. I don't remember if this is the part or it's later, but he's like, yeah, I adjusted the servo mechanism to... I was like... The fuck does that have to do with this?
they actually spend like 30 seconds describing, we've got this device that can turn sound into electrical impulses so that it can respond to the things we say. It's like, what? Why is that in here? Just say you taught it to speak. I've already passed suspension of disbelief with you made the fucking thing talk in the 1950s with like, I mean, punch cards or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, like, there's so many challenges to making, like, a human-like robot that, like, they thought that that was the one they needed to explain is really funny.
Meanwhile,
it's also really telling of, like, you know, what people thought was
right,
hard
yeah,
about
the
robotics.
Field is so young that it's just amazing. Seriously amazing.
So anyways, they turn the robot on and they're like, robot, get up. And the robot gets up and then they're like, robot, what were you made for? And the robot, and I'm going to do my best to get a direct quote on this. So don't interrupt until after. The robot says, or they're like, robot, why were you created? And it goes, to kill, correction, to serve.
The best part is the guy's like, robot, what were you made for? And he's like, to kill. And the woman's like, oh my God. And he's like, and the doctor's like, oh, what, like, I didn't hear. What'd you say? And he's like, correction, to serve. And the doctor just marks off like, oh, okay, that's fine. Like, are you
fucking
kidding me?
That must
have
been a total fluke. I'm like, there's no way.
His words are to kill.
And then it sees the doctor's daughter and starts saying, woman, and walking towards her. And they're like, robot, get back at the table. And then they're like, why are you frightened, my dear? And it's like, because a fucking robot just said, I want to murder humans and started approaching me. But instead of saying that, she's like,
woman.
But instead of saying that, she's like, well, its eyes were kind of hypnotic. So what is happening?
Yeah, I thought that was going to matter, too. I thought it was going to like hypnotize people and use some hypnosis.
I thought I was a lot smarter than it was, but it is not.
Apparently they programmed the word woman into it.
Woman.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay, but so this robot says to kill and then starts basically walking at her menacingly and not really listening to them at first. And then she's like, wow, that thing is terrifying. I'm really scared of it. And the doctor's like, Don't bring emotion into this. Don't bring emotion into this. It's a robot. It listens to everything we say. It's like, dude, the first thing it said was to kill. How stupid are you? Like, how completely brain dead are you? There's another really good quote coming up, too.
So in a smarter show, they would sort of build up to the robot, like them losing control of it more and more and it getting more and more menacing. But they're just like, nah, building action is for suckers. This thing is murderous from the second it turns on.
Because you would think it's right. Like, yeah. When it starts off, it's going to be like something really helpful and everyone really likes it. And it kind of has some like weird quirks to it, but they kind of ignore that. But no, literally its first words are to kill. It's like, hey, maybe we should probably go back to the drawing board on this guy. We screwed it up somewhere. There's a bug in the code. There's a fly in the ointment. Like,
start like pondering like, okay, it does have, now don't get it twisted. They reveal that the robot does have a kill subroutine, but it's only supposed to be activated in cases of self-defense, which on its own is fucking crazy because this thing is supposed to be like manual labor. And can you imagine if a forklift like tried to murder you if you were going to turn it off? But then they're not like perturbed at all by apparently it got into the kill subroutine briefly. It seems like the one thing you want never to happen.
Be like, why did it say that? You know, it's like, what led to it saying that?
Yeah. And then immediately after this, they like turn it off, and they're
then
like,
they go out for dinner.
Yeah,
they go out for fucking dinner.
Or don't they go to a play?
Yeah, they go to a play.
Yeah. They're like, all right, let's turn it off. We'll figure this out. We'll figure this out later. And it's like, this seems kind of urgent.
Well, it's off, right? They think it's off.
I mean, yeah, but still, like, you first turn it on, it does something totally insane. You're like, well, let's go watch a play. That'll make us all feel better.
This thing is 500 fucking pounds, and they repeatedly say that they don't think it's like it's basically unstoppable.
I don't get why it's dangerous, because you can just like, can't you just unplug it? They didn't really have batteries back then, did they?
That is another thing that they never mentioned that would be, frankly, like, I think they could have taken a swing at and with more success than how this thing can understand language. The power problem is like a thing that stumped robotics for generations, but they could have said some fucking gobbledygook or something. As it is, apparently they've also created like essentially free energy for this fucking thing.
Yeah, it can clearly move around, as we'll see later.
Yeah. You know what was really interesting when they asked it like what your purpose is? It really reminded me of Rick and Morty, even though it was reversed.
You know? The to serve butter thing.
Oh my god.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. This episode honestly feels like a parody of old sci-fi, but it's not. It's just bad. Is. Yeah.
So they're coming back from this place.
Before that, there's a really good part. There's a really good part because they're going out and, you know, they're talking to the daughter and they're like, oh, you can't like be so emotional about this, even though she was like almost killed by a freaking robot. And then she's like, do you think that it's possible that you could lose control? And he's like, that would never happen. He's like, okay, but is it possible? And then he's like, perhaps. He just like cuts out.
And then there's a fucking organ sting.
Yeah. That's when they go to the play. Like, right after he's like, yeah, it's totally possible he could just, like, break out and kill everyone. I don't know.
Yeah, this guy is definitely a programmer, like, at heart. I think Ziegler's like, no, there's no way my code could ever do that.
It would never do that. Well, could it? Well, yeah, maybe.
Probably. I mean,
whatever.
Listen, the user input, as long as they keep it reasonable, it'll be fine. Do you have any checks to make sure it's reasonable? No. Why would I do that? That's their problem.
That'd be user error. I don't control that.
So, anyways, they come back from the play, and they hear this horrible scream. And
wait,
then,
before that, they get home, and they're friggin' drinking coffee at, like, midnight, and that just blew my mind. I know that some people do this, but...
Yeah, they're fucking... They're breaking all the rules. They're breaking the three laws of robotics. They're breaking the laws of conservation of energy and mass, one presumes. And also, they're drinking coffee much past what they should. Obviously, the cutoff time is 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Am I right, guys?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes I push to 5, but I usually regret it. Yeah. But yeah, not midnight. Jesus.
They're just like, hey, you know what would be fun? If I didn't sleep tonight, and maybe tomorrow. I don't know.
Some people drink coffee right before they go to bed.
Yeah, I've heard of this, but I don't understand it, you know?
Yeah, apparently like, if you're like really, like if you're really used to caffeine, it can help you sleep.
That's just so crazy to me. Like,
I don't do it, but
the couple of times I've like had caffeine right before I went to bed, I like managed to get to sleep, but the dreams I had were horrible. Like,
well, you
and
probably
I just
were not used to it enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
drink
totally
a ton
fair.
Of coffee.
I drink a half cup of coffee every day because more than that gives me headaches and makes me incredibly irritable. So, no.
I mean, maybe all your dreams are terrible and scary and you only remember them when you drink coffee.
Also, were you in a coastal town at the time?
Named,
maybe?
Dagon?
Named Innsmouth.
Like, were there a lot of really weird, stinky fishermen?
Was there a woman you wanted to have sex with, and then it turned out she had tentacle legs? But you're like, you know, I kind of think I'd still do it, but for some reason the guy didn't go for it.
A bigger problem than the tentacle legs, personally.
You know what, Raul? I'm gonna blow your mind. Although generally in pornography they do start with mouth stuff, you don't have to. If you're into the person enough, you can kind of do whatever sex both of you want.
No, I'm not. I mean, just for like, I don't know why you went so sexual, you know? I'm just saying if you have a relationship with her and you kiss her, you might get caught on her teeth.
That's fair. But I went to sexual because she's a topless woman begging the man to have sex with her, though.
Yeah, she was so cute. My
yeah,
God.
This isn't quite me being a pervert. That scene is very perverted, though.
Fish tentacle lady wants to have sex with... Well, the guy was also a fish tentacle.
We've crossed the references of what I understand.
We're talking about
it's a movie called Dagon.
Oh, you should see it, man. It is so good.
I've seen it, actually, Ron. I have seen it,
but I just don't remember.
Oh, it was so good.
I don't know. It's a naked lady I saw when I'm 13, so it's pretty well burned into my brain. Anyways, so they get back. They hear this horrible scream. They rush upstairs. They find the security guard with his neck broken and the robots next to him and turned on. Now, obviously, I've just said that sentence so every single fucking person who ever listens to this knows what happened, which is the robot turned itself on and murdered the guy. But they spent like...
There's nothing else around and they just heard him scream.
Yeah. And they're like, well, maybe he turned the robot on himself, or I don't know, maybe he just fell and died in an unrelated accident because he was scared of the robot. And
yeah. They're like, it's only supposed to kill in self-defense. Is it possible there's an error in the automatic feedback system?
It's like, why the fuck? Again, why is it programmed to kill in self-defense? That's stupid.
I mean, yeah, it's only a prototype. Like, who cares
if
it
maybe
dies?
Take that part out for this time.
Yeah, maybe make it don't kill under
save
any circumstances.
Fraud, man. Like,
yeah. Save the war machines for later.
You're right. They shouldn't put the kill the person in until they're ready to deploy the fucking thing.
Why? I mean, the robot's also very stupid. Like, why did it even bother killing the security guard? It should have just marched straight to, like, you know, the Vatican or whatever and become the Pope.
It should have marched to the Vatican, killed the Pope, assumed his identity, and then declared that robots have souls and go to heaven, and everyone else is excommunicated, and thus it becomes the sole ruler of heaven.
Boom! Robots in control. I mean, the machine does say master of men, or wait, was that before?
Yeah.
I'm forgetting.
It hasn't done it yet, but it's about to.
And I'm like, what are they programmed that in?
Well, they even said they didn't put that in. And it's like, at that point, you gotta believe, like, you just fucked up. Like, it's wrong somehow. Like, definitely take out its power source so that it doesn't wake up again. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you people?
But instead, they spent about 3 minutes talking about whether or not the robot could turn itself on. And then they eventually decide, okay, we don't think it could, but ? And they go to bed. And the woman's even like, hey, should we do something with the corpse? And they're like, nah, just leave it. We'll deal
yeah,
with
I know.
It
Isn't
tomorrow.
That like a crime?
Yeah, it's like, dude, you got to call the cops now. Like, they're gonna be very suspicious when you're like, you waited till the next morning.
Honestly, Elizabeth should have been in charge from the very beginning because
she really
seems should've. Like she's the smartest of the three.
By
I mean,
far.
She still seems stupid because, again, the reason she gave for being scared of the robot was dumb. But she does at least seem to have a self-preservation instinct and sort of an understanding of how the world works, which the other guys don't.
Yes.
So they go to bed. And then the narrator goes upstairs and he finds Elizabeth waiting outside the laboratory. And he's like, hey, you couldn't sleep? And she's like, no. And he's like, me neither. That's weird. And I guess the whole we couldn't sleep because we saw a horrible dead body and it was probably killed by something we made. Like, it's not said. And I don't think it's even really implied, although that's clearly what's going on. And then the robot comes to life. And it starts saying, master of mankind, kill, kill, kill. Oh, wait, sorry. They go into the laboratory and discover that the robot's on, as we all fucking expected it to be. And the guy's sort of like, well, maybe it could turn itself on because it's got a short in the automatic control system. And Ziegler will later say, no, the automatic control system is perfect because we checked everything that went into it five times. And
yeah, and you know, they keep trying to diagnose it, like, as if the diagnosis eventually is going to explain something about it, or, like, they're going to figure out, like, oh my god, you know, automatons will always try and take over men, or something like that, or, like, the doctor did this on purpose. Anything, you know? Any reason why they would keep talking about, like, oh, here's the mechanism, and this is how it could possibly happen, but none of it matters in the end. Nothing.
It actually gets even more confusing because it's like, okay, the thing's got a short that lets itself turn on, but what explains the whole sentience decides to conquer the world thing, you know? Does it have, like, two shorts?
No, yeah, it's the servos. The servos were misaligned.
Oh, man. That explains. Misheard the code.
But this whole section really does sort of drive home, just eyeballing your code isn't enough. And even if you pair programming, eyeballing your code isn't enough. You need unit tests, guys. You need unit tests. You need regression tests. You need the whole thing.
What is wrong? I'm not doing any of that shit, man.
You honestly need end-to-end testing, which is kind of what they're doing, but wrong. Not
have you heard of the ultimate test called production?
Yeah, it's called Agile, baby.
So anyways, the robot starts approaching them menacingly. They slam the door on it, but it's like bashing its way through. They mentioned that the thing is 500 pounds, which really drives home what the fuck is powering it. Like, servos that can move 500 pounds, especially 1950s ones, which I can't imagine were that efficient. Whatever. Dr. Ziegler comes up too, and he's like, what's going on? And the guy's like, robots turned evil. Dr. Ziegler's like, that's weird. So then the robot breaks through the door, and it's charging at them. And Dr. Ziegler's like, wait, I've got an idea. The robot
has a brilliant idea.
The robot is bad at turning around. So they stand in front of a window and wait for it to charge them. And then at the last second, like you when you're fighting the first boss in a video game, they step aside and it falls out the window. And it dies. And then Dr. Ziegler goes and he's like, you know, this automaton turned out bad, but I still have faith that automatons will eventually, like, let us conquer the world or whatever. And eventually they will let us go to outer space. And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah. They don't learn any lesson. They never figure out why it broke. The automaton was a complete moron that just fell out of a window and died.
Also, why the automaton, it fell out of the window. Okay, that could happen to, you know, you or me if we didn't see the window and we're focusing on wanting to murder someone. It hears them say the plan to do that.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a bit of shit.
Maybe they're whispering that plan, though. Did they have the plan when it was behind the window? I don't remember.
Or behind the door? I don't think so. But I guess a close listening might read that in this one case, the writing isn't quite as stupid as it could be.
I mean, I don't think it'd be crazy to see a window, but I mean, the robot is able to move. So, you know.
I mean, it has to be painfully obvious what they're doing. And there's three of them, and they're all standing by the window, so they can't move too fast because, you know, there's three of them.
Why does the robot even... Yeah. It's like...
Why does the robot even bother trying to kill humans?
Yeah, why does it even bother? Like, what does it even care, you know? Like,
master of man.
I guess it's trying to conquer the human race, but if so, I mean...
It's going
to
do it very slowly.
Yeah.
One person at a time. It's like, that's the plan.
And can't even survive like a fall out of a window. So there's no way it was ever going to work. It might have killed those three, but.
Like, the thing, I guess, might be sort of bulletproof. There is no way in hell it's going to be able to take on, like, a tank, which you would need to be able to do to conquer the world, I feel.
Why did it kill the security guy?
Because it wanted to kill,
and go
dude.
Back to sleep, like.
No.
Why disturb my slumber?
Well, because, like, you know, when you first see it, you're like, oh, I guess it's smart. It's, like, trying to trick them into thinking that it was turned off.
Right? Yeah.
But it's not smart at all. It's a complete moron. So it kind of begs the question, like, I didn't know to turn back off or whatever.
Okay, it's also really confusing about the difference between its control system and its power supply. Because, like, it apparently turns its own power supply on because that humming that they noticed when it turned itself on later wasn't there before, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's what they were saying. Like, you know, it's completely powered off. How the heck could it power itself on?
Now, I got a little theory. It won't solve all of this, but it will solve most of this.
Does it involve Hellboy?
Oh God, I wish. You know what? I'll see if I can come up with another theory involving Hellboy later. But perhaps it killed the security guard, and then obviously, as any of us would when we committed a murder, it became intensely aroused and jerked off three or four times. And then, of course, after you jerk off three or four times, you got to take a nap.
Yep.
That does explain why they said there was oil everywhere. Yeah.
Although it does also raise the question of why they programmed or gave the robot an 8-foot-long penis.
Okay, I've got a theory. The security guard, you know, suspiciously is missing or is not mentioned in the room when they come back to it later, right? He was alive the whole time. He was fucking with the robot while they were programming it, and he turned it into a master of man and was trying to kill them. Because they didn't tip last Christmas.
Oh my God!
Okay, so the scene where they find the security guard. So they run up to the room and they spend like 3 minutes examining the robot before they notice the fucking corpse next to it. It's astonishing.
Yeah, and they clearly heard
somebody
screaming.
The only reason they went up there was because of screaming.
And like, I don't think that they actually like do a very thorough check of him or anything, and they don't call the police, so he could have still been alive, and they didn't call an ambulance or anything, so he died because of them. You know, that's a very distinct possibility.
Well, he definitely died because of them. I mean, they made the robot.
Well, regardless, though, he might have been able to be saved, and they just chose not to call an ambulance for something.
Yes, I think this is what happened. The robot was up there, and the security guard came by, and he was tapping his nightstick on the windows, and he looked in, and the robot was sitting on the counter, and the robot was like, "I like your gun."
Yeah,
and then
like,
the camera
cuts
away.
He did like a beckon.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob was like wearing a blonde wig and a dress with like a stuck coconuts in the bra area. And going, you, while batting its enormous eyelashes.
Yoo-hoo.
Master of sex.
Yep, that's definitely what happened.
Yeah. Man, I'm going to fall for that.
The robot's like, mankind isn't the only thing I have mastered. Wink. I cannot actually wink, but I can say the word wink to indicate when I would wink. If I could wink.
Yeah. Maybe the security guard wasn't dead. He just, like, his yelling was his orgasm noise, and then he passed out from being exhausted.
And he just ran away in shame, and he's now a priest in a South American country.
Yeah. I think, all these easily fit in with the story. It's just a matter of choosing the best one.
It honestly fits in just as well as the real ending.
Well, the real ending is sort of there isn't one, because for it to be an ending, wouldn't the characters have to like change or grow? And they don't
even learn
what
changed by turning into a pile of scrap.
A robot is the only character that exhibited any growth because it went
evolving.
Because it went from not being alive to being murderous to being dead. And yeah, you know, that's actually a very satisfying arc.
Honestly, they didn't even need to lure it out the window because I assume it's plugged in, so they could have just walked away.
I don't think it was plugged in, Raul. I think you're over focusing.
Or even well, if it had a huge,
I think it had a nuclear fission cell.
Would have friggin' run out of power, you know.
Had a
eventually.
Nuclear fission cell that would never run out.
Oh, a nuclear fission fuel cell.
Yep.
Thing.
That explains it all.
Now, Raul, it was powered by gasoline, but it had a secondary power source of the souls it had sent to hell.
Oh.
So every time
that
it killed.
Lasts a while.
Yeah. We're talking
like
days at least.
Like, even if you're browsing all day, like, it'll last, like,
yeah.
days, you know?
Yeah. You murder someone and then plug your phone into them. You're good for about a week.
That would be sweet. Can you imagine how much better our lives would be? Man.
You know, you can already plug into the wall, so.
Yeah, but I mean, I have to charge it, dude, like, every day. Like, if I could just kill somebody and charge my phone for 10 straight days, man.
You know, this is a little bit chilling, discovering just how close we are to Raul killing us to make his life slightly better.
It's like, it's a very minuscule improvement.
It's like, I don't have to charge my phone in every night. That's definitely worth taking a human life.
I'm willing to make like, the sacrifice.
You already charge it while you're asleep and you're not using it. But
you work from fucking home on a computer. You could just have it plugged in all day if you really wanted to.
Yeah, at the very end of this episode, they're like, this was fictional. And I was like, no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
No, this was
we
fucking
know this
real.
Happened, you idiots.
Lying to me.
Yeah, you said Dr. Ziegler's speech was famous. How could it be famous if it wasn't real, dumbass?
It wasn't even famous in the context of his story.
Shut up, Ronald. Why would he lie to us about whether the speech is famous or not?
Did they have TV in this era?
They would have had TV then, but they're... Okay, this is a weird thing. So the TVs actually came out in the late 40s, but they were very expensive. And the other weird thing was that there wasn't actually a lot of programming for them. So the first TV networks were actually put out by the companies that made TVs, and they were like weird local markets that existed entirely so that there would be stuff on TV.
Oh, that's interesting. So yeah. Basically, his speech would have only been famous
well,
by word of
mouth.
Could have
gone out over the radio.
Oh, radio. Would anyone have listened to that over the radio? I mean, I don't
we
know.
We interrupt this urgent broadcast to bring you a weird speech a guy at a scientific conference is giving about automatons, whatever the fuck those are.
I mean, he did have a pretty sweet value proposition in that the robots will do all the work and we'll just fuck off and do nothing.
It is really interesting
honestly,
to think
I
of
do
it
like
from
that.
A current perspective of automation where it's like, oh, wow, no one's going to have jobs and, like, rich people are going to get all the resources and everyone else is going to be totally screwed because of automation.
Yeah.
But, like,
yeah.
You know, theoretically, it would be really cool if, like, everyone could just chill and let the robots do all the work.
And then we just kind of get the product of what they built equally. And, yeah, that seems like a pretty good system if you could make it work. But, I don't know. Apparently,
some dude would be like, I'm going to make a robot to kill all the other people.
Yeah. Of course, you know, it's probably just a better system that like one person gets all of the resources of everyone else and just hoards it and does it ludicrous things with it. And everyone else kind of just starves to death and doesn't get medicine.
Now, Ronald, I guess I'll be the rich guy.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Ronald, I know you're being sarcastic, but I'm going to say something that'll flip it on your head. What if you're the rich guy?
Oh, well, I mean, that sounds like the perfect system.
Where do I sign up?
I want a 1 in 7 billion chance at having to...
So that I can maybe be a little happier? I don't even know if that's true.
I don't even know if that's possible, man.
Do you guys really think that Richard Branson felt any different after, like, maybe 5 days after he went into space? Do you think he felt any different than he did 5 days before? Also, he didn't technically go into space, but still.
I think he was probably a little scared 5 days before.
I think his
more
bone
relieved.
Density was probably a little lower.
He was only in space for like...
Well, he was in space for like a minute.
Out from
well, he's old.
He was in space for like 5 minutes. It wasn't even in space. I do think that after he got back down to Earth, he probably was at least a little bit distressed to discover just how much of like the online commentary was people hoping he would die.
I mean, we already had, there was already a billionaire who went to the space station like 20 years ago. Like, I mean, this is the first time a billionaire has like made his own rocket delivery system.
Well, you know, made his own in quotations.
He paid another person to make it.
I mean, this is the first time a billionaire has from the ground literally like smelted the ore to put his own rocket ship together.
You ever played that game Factorio? That's what Richard.
You know, I don't know much about Richard Branson. I assume he's a piece of shit because he's really rich, and it's kind of hard to be really rich without being a piece of shit. But if he had built his own rocket with his own hands from his own design and gotten into space and come back, I would probably like respect him.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
I would respect him a lot more than what I do.
Yeah. So, anyway,
you respect him for building a rocket and like all the machinery and the fucking,
you know, even if he was just a part of it,
and just like Elon Musk.
Okay, I assume that Elon
Musk more hands on in it.
I assume that Elon Musk's contributions to anything he engineers is essentially giving his ideas to the actual engineers, who then kind of wait until he's out of eyeshot, wad it up, and throw it into a trash can.
I'm assuming he just like buys bitcoins for his engineers or dog coins rather.
Yeah. So anyways, let's go around and more fully, would you recommend this? Again, I think this is a perfectly great time at 1.3 speed, or if you're with your buddies and for some reason you don't want to make fun of a movie and instead want to spend 24 minutes making fun of a 1950s person's idea of what a computer is. Raul?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really interesting to think about how computers have evolved over the past 70 years.
And Ronald?
I think it's funny, but if you already listened to this episode, then we ruined it.
Yeah, that might
twist.
Be. Well, it's not it's not like ruining the twist, but the
I mean, we already talked about the funny parts.
Yeah, the reason the episode is funny is because it sort of just straight-facedly blows past these, and then you're like, wait, what? And so us pointing at them and laughing at them might ruin it. I don't know. Okay, so anyways, you guys want to do a quick would you rather or just do recommendations?
Yeah, let's do would you rather.
Okay. Do either of you have one? If not, I've got one prepared.
I feel like I had one last time, but I forgot it. So
yeah, but I know you had one last time. I don't remember what it was, but I'm pretty sure it was stupid.
No, well, I'm pretty sure it was really good. Point. It was like really good.
Dude, it was like mind blowing.
I remember you were like, dude, that's a really good one.
Oh, you
used, like,
bro,
really
I'm
going to
Venmo you
words.
$10,000 because that's such a good idea.
No, dude, I would feel bad, but yeah,
but
go ahead.
Okay. So this is, you know, not like a super deep question or anything, but what is the largest animal you guys believe that you could defeat in a bare knuckle fight?
Hmm.
Feel
or
free
you
to
say
ask.
Bare knuckle? Do you mean like you take the knuckles of a bear and like graft them onto your body?
Yes, obviously that's what I mean by a slightly archaic, I'll grant you, but still fairly well understood phrase, Raul. This insane nightmare thing you thought of.
I mean, have you seen a bear's claws? Like, I feel like that could be a super huge advantage, you know?
Do you really think that would happen? It would stab your hand as much as it would the other.
Look, I just want to have big hands. All right.
I love that Rahul's idea of like, what can I do to increase my fighting effectiveness is give myself a horrifying massive infection on both hands.
No, dude, bear DNA is totally compatible with human, so
yeah, dude, it's like grafting on a plant. It's like you ever done wine agriculture? Okay. Horticulture.
Yeah, I sure have.
All right. Biggest animal I could take in a fight. Well, I mean, clearly I could take the dinosaurs because they're dead and I'm not.
You walk into a museum and start punching the exhibits, going, take that, nerd.
Could even survive a meteor.
That's pathetic.
Raul?
Oh, man. Biggest animal I could take, suited
in a fight,
bare knuckles. Man, I probably can't take shit. Maybe a
you could take a dog.
I seriously doubt it.
Well, what kind of what size
what kind of
dog?
Like a teacup poodle, maybe?
I'm pretty confident you could take a teacup poodle.
Maybe if I mean shit. If it bit me, I don't know what I would do. Like
you
I feel
a
too
goat?
No. I mean it depends on the size of goat. Right, because
like
they're sort of
size
they're,
goat.
Oh hell no, man! They're built to headbutt. Like,
all right, let's work down from there. How about a donkey?
Donkeys are bigger than goats,
but they are not as good at headbutting.
Yeah, they can't headbutt.
They can bite.
They're not as tall.
They're not as tall. That's true. And they've got big ears.
Yeah, how does that help them fight?
No, it helps me fight them because I could grab their ears.
Could you take a swan?
I feel like I want to say I could take a swan, but I'm pretty sure I can't.
Like, dude, I've seen them. They can constrict people with their necks.
What?
I just made that up, but that'd be cool, right?
It's like, why would they? How is that a strategy? Like, what does a swan eat? Like, I thought they ate like grass and stuff, you know? Like,
I don't know what they eat, but
actually,
I'm pretty sure it's not entire humans.
You're wrong. Swan, actually, this is a fun fact. Before 1900, the number three leading cause of death in Europe every year was getting eaten by swans.
This is a really hard question.
It's really, I mean, yeah, it is hard.
I would have to say like
you take a horse.
Oh yeah, you know, that's the answer I was looking for. Lawrence, my final answer is I think I could take a horse and a bare knuckle.
Yeah, there was a boxer who was famous for punching a horse and killing it.
Do you do that barehanded or with a boxing glove?
That I'm not sure.
I feel like if you did barehanded, it would just shatter your hand, you know? Like,
I mean, I'm pretty sure it was a sucker punch too, you know? It wasn't like the horse was ready for that.
Yeah, of course not. I mean,
if it was ready for a fight,
if it was fucking ready, how would you ever?
I had a horrifying image of a boxer like walking up to a horse, like lovingly feeding it some sugar cubes while patting its head, and then falling off while it wasn't looking and just catching it like right in the side of the head and snapping its neck. I did not care for that image, Ronald, and it's your fault it was in my head.
I'm sorry, man, but that's something a real person did.
It's also something Conan did in the movie Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, he punched a camel, but he didn't kill it, I don't think.
Yeah, and
he wouldn't have snapped his neck. I don't think it would have just.
I think it just probably jarred
brain damage.
Yeah.
That...
All right, what animal could you take, Lawrence?
So I've prepared a little statement to justify my answer. So, and this is a Lawrence original. If you look online and you think you found the source of it, you didn't. I said it first. So I'm death to anything that walks or crawls. Where I go, nothing stands in my way. I can let him go, or orcs need good at... Fuck. Let me try again.
All right, start over. We'll edit that part out.
I'm death to anything that walks or crawl. Okay, one more fucking time.
Why are you saying it like that?
Shut up. That's how I talk. Shut up. Anyways, I'm death to anything that walks or crawls. Where I go, nothing stands in my way. I is more cunning than a grot and more killy than a dread. And for that reason, I think I could kill anything that has ever lived with my bare hands.
That's interesting.
I would
you should
truly
probably get
like
into
to
boxing.
Test, I would love to test its ability.
Fuck that bit up so much, and it wasn't even a good bit.
Who's the first
was that,
animal?
Was
that
a Warhammer
fight?
Orc quote?
Yes. So it's inexplicable, and then I didn't execute it well. It's a great spot for a bit to be. And also, I didn't really try the fun accent that is the main reason for doing a Warhammer orc quote.
The one that's like, I'm an orc, and I fight.
I wants to get stuck in with the boy. Nah, that's horrible. But they're supposed to sound like English.
I'm not even going
to
try for it.
They're supposed to sound like English soccer
hooligans. I can't fucking do it.
Yeah.
Boy wants to get stuck in with the boys.
So anyways,
I'll allow it.
Let's do a quick recommendation or caution and say goodbye to what I think was a pretty good episode. What do you guys think?
I've done better.
They're all good, man. They're all like 11 out of 10 at least. That's before the curve. After the curve,
I recommend
like 30 out of 10 at least.
I recommend watching Lawrence fight a hippo. Because
dude,
it's gonna be really funny.
Like a teacup hippo though, or a real hippo? Like
an African river hippo.
Is the teacup hippo a thing that exists, or did Rahul just invent like the hot pet craze of 2060?
You ever read Jurassic Park?
Oh right, they're talking about making them miniature dinosaurs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have a caution to go with just watching me absolutely murder a large African mammal?
Yeah, I caution watching the Tomorrow War on Amazon. It's just god awful.
Oh, is it really god awful? I thought it was fun. I mean, I didn't watch it. I just heard that it was fun but terrible.
Yeah, you know, I heard a lot of that too. It's not fun.
They advertised it for it so much. I don't understand it.
It's very high. It's very high production quality. It is
not very high script quality.
Well, it's just extremely boring. Let me put it that way. You know,
there's
some good acting in it. There's I'm sure the direction is fine. It's very, very boring.
Yeah,
and like,
you will laugh,
it's full of action sequences that are not at all interesting.
I want to double back to Rahul's argument that because they advertised it a lot, it cannot be bad.
Well, I mean, like, why would they advertise
it
when it's
bad?
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I know it happens all the time,
right?
But I just don't understand.
You think they would just be like, hey, let's not tell anyone about this?
It's like they watch it again and they're like, man, this movie sucks.
Holy.
You know, like, every DC movie, like, that I've seen at least.
They're like, hey, we spent $200,000 or $200 million on a Chris Pratt starring action movie. I hope no one finds out.
That was this movie?
I think it cost like a stupid amount of money for a streaming service, especially considering I haven't seen the movie, but I watched someone posted the end action sequence on Twitter with Chris Pratt just fighting a tentacle monster. And it looked like, okay, I was seeing like a rough screen grab or rough grab on Twitter, but it looked to be about mid-2000s special effects, you know, where they, you know, you squint and they're fine, but you study it at any length and they're like, this is pretty garbage.
Wait, I'm so confused now because I thought you didn't care about special effects quality at all whatsoever. Considering the movies you watch.
Okay, so here's the thing. I will overlook special effects quite a bit if the movie is doing something interesting with them. However, if the whole selling point of the movie is just, hey, we've got special effects, and then the special effects they have are a bad version of the standard CGI I can see anywhere, I generally will kind of turn on the movie. So I'll watch a Godzilla movie all day because I find Suitmation quite charming. But you show me some, like, you know, an action, let's say, I'm trying to think of a, like, an especially egregious example of this, but you show me, let's say, like, you know, a mid-tier action movie where they decided to really CG up all the car crash chases, and there were a lot of car chases. I'm probably not going to be that impressed with that because I can see good car chases other places, you know?
Okay.
Anyways, Raul, you got a recommendation and caution?
Yeah. I don't really have a caution because everything I've seen lately has been good. But my recommendation is Chernobyl. Fantastic. Really
you
fantastic.
Want to watch somebody melt.
Oh, the HBO series.
There wasn't much of that, you know. Yeah. Like
one for me, but you know,
only one melty.
That's why Ronald is convinced that RoboCop is the greatest movie ever made. Not because it might actually be, but just because that one dude does melt.
Yeah. Look, man, you go to a party where somebody melts. That's the thing you remember. You don't remember like the fucking snacks.
But on the other hand, you show Ronald the Toxic Avenger, and I assume more than one person melts in that. So Ronald's like, nah, this is over the top. I don't care for it.
Well, I remember you said that when you watched Who Killed Roger Rabbit, you were really into that melty scene.
Yeah,
so
I was like,
this is like coming out of left
recommendations
field for
melting?
we discover Ronald's IMDb profile, and he's made a list of movies where people melt. We can't tell if it's sexual or not, but we're kind of concerned.
I'm pretty sure it's sexual.
I mean, look, everything is about sex except for sex.
Which is about power.
Sex is about melting.
Oh. it's so good. Like, they go into, like, the Soviet idea and how important it is not to embarrass a state. Yeah, it's just fantastic. Anyway, that's it for me.
So, for my recommendation, I'm going to go with Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. It's a BBC series from, I think, like, the mid-2000s or mid-2010s. The premise of it is that there is a writer who is incredibly pompous. He brags that he has written more books than he's read, and he's kind of was like a mid-tier, like, 80s paperback horror guy. And he got the money in the 80s to make his own TV series, so he made a kind of Kingdom Hospital knockoff called Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. His name is Garth Marenghi, and he, like, cast his publisher in one of the roles. And it's, like, terrible, but it's also, like, this examination of his psyche. And it's very hard to describe because it's, like, presented, it's made in the mid-2000s and it's presenting this intentionally terrible, weird throwback. But it is some of the funniest shit I have ever seen. It hits on, like, so many different weird levels. Like, the plotting itself is almost ATHF level bizarre. And then you also got it filtering through him trying to work through his issues. So he's got this entire, like, episode that's him trying to grapple with the fact that he's racist against Scottish people, for instance. It's just check it out. Finding it is a little bit hard. You can maybe get it on YouTube or, you know, from legal places where you can download things that you couldn't get other places. Wink, wink. But it is well worth checking out. And I'll send you guys a link after.
And how did you discover this weird thing?
I was actually, now it's a little bit internet famous, but I was actually trying to ponder that. I know I found it, I think, in like 2013, 2000 and somewhere in there, but I have no idea why or how I came across it. Someone must have just mentioned it on something I was listening to, and I'm like, I'll check it out.
Stuck in your head.
Yeah, it's fucking wild. And
yeah, send me a link. I want to see.
Yeah, I've got it all uploaded to a Google Drive after acquiring it legally. And then for a caution, I attempted to watch a television series called Prodigal Son. It stars Martin which is the English Sheen? God damn it.
Charlie?
No, god fucking damn it. One sec.
Martin.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Martin Sheen isn't English.
Michael. No, it's Michael Sheen.
Sheen.
Shit.
The premise is that there's this serial killer. He's essentially Hannibal Lecter. He's a refined upper-class doctor. He gets thrown in prison, and then his son becomes an FBI profiler and starts consulting with him on, like, solving cases. So it's kind of like Silence of the Lambs, the series, except it's not actually Silence of the Lambs, the series, which is the thing that exists. It's called Clarice. I haven't seen it. And I was watching it just because that's such a weird premise to be like, yeah, this kid becomes an FBI profiler and starts consulting with the serial killer dad. It's odd, but the first episode I thought was pretty good because they really play up how much the son is also kind of a loose cannon and crazy. Like, he chops a guy's arm off, which is not something you see in every, like, pilot. Yeah. He does it to save it from him from a bomb, but still. But it pretty quickly just drowns in the, like, necessities of becoming a procedural of the week. And it doesn't do enough with its premise, probably because Michael Sheen is an actual movie star. So they couldn't, like, get enough time with him to really have him. You know, he's in, like, 5 minutes an episode, which I guess makes sense because it's, you know, Hannibal Lecter isn't in that much Silence of the Lambs either. But if I'm watching it only for him and he's not in it that much, it gets pretty dull. And then the cases they're solving aren't that interesting either. So, yeah, I wouldn't recommend checking it out.
That's too good.
Yeah. So, anyways. Yeah, it could be worse. So, anyways, plugs. Anyone want to plug anything? We have actually started releasing episodes, so rating or reviewing us on iTunes might help us, although I at least am pretty cool with not many people listening to this episode, or any of these episodes, because then fewer people will be mad at me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that whole, like, you thinking you could take a hippo, that's going to spawn some internet outrage.
Yeah, I think you're doomed. It's over, man.
You think people are going to start... canceled,
son.
People are going to start releasing hippos at my house. Being like, take this, motherfucker. And then they're going to be so embarrassed when I defeat those hippos.
Release the hippo. What sound does a hippo make? I was going to make the hippo sound, but then I was like,
I have no idea. Stomp, 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 stomp.
Nope, I was going to do a joke where I punched my crotch repeatedly and said that was the sound the hippo made because I hoped it would sound like jerking off. But no, I just punched my crotch a couple of times.
Why do you need to punch your crotch for that sound?
Maybe you don't, Rahul. It's the only thing that gets me hard anymore, guys. I'm sorry. I got a weird...
The stiletto on the crotch?
No. Not the stiletto, the boxing glove.
Boxing glove, okay. You know, I saw this weird fucking video on Reddit where it was just like this guy just like, I don't really understand it, but it was just a bunch of objects being rammed into his crotch. One of them was a kettlebell. This fucking huge guy just punched him. Like, I'm like,
Ronald, he was on our crotch trauma, and that was very appropriate.
Bro, this is like a fetish that you're putting out there.
Shut up. But yes. No.
Wait, can we cut this?
Can we cut this, but then send me the audio file later for reasons? Also, Lawrence, is it possible for you to pitch my voice down about 5 octaves?
Yeah, like, Laura, can you increase the size of my hands on this podcast, please? Just
okay. Anyways, signing off.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna get